Hello and welcome to Art Focus. I'm Wendy Webb and I will be your host today, standing in for the lovely Ava Lake. Today we are speaking with photographer Lauren Henkin. Lauren is new to Portland. She moved here from DC and has opened a studio in North Portland. Lauren has just released her first book, Displaced. Displaced was recently selected to show in Le Garage, a prestigious photography festival in France. Displaced is a limited edition handmade book of 39 images in two parts. The first part was photographed in Nova Scotia and the second part in DC. Welcome to the show, Lauren.
Thank you, Wendy.
So in the introduction to the first part of the book, you write that your project began as your marriage was ending. You write, I needed to escape. I needed to find beauty. So why Nova Scotia? And tell us how these images represent escape and refuge and beauty.
Well, it was pretty much a spur of the moment decision to go to Nova Scotia. Things had gotten pretty tense in my house, and I really did need to escape. And I think in part, I needed to kind of convince myself that I could do something on my own again. I could travel by myself. I could photograph on my own and just explore something new that hadn't been a part of my marriage. And I had spent a lot of time in Maine, mostly photographing and taking workshops, and had always wanted to go to Nova Scotia, but never really had the opportunity to do it. And it just kind of was an instinctual decision. I knew immediately when I made the decision, I want to go off somewhere by myself and photograph, that that's where it would be. And the timing worked out right as well. It was, you know, pretty much 5 weeks beginning in the beginning of August. So
you got there. Did you know you were going to make a book? What did you think it was the beginning of, or when you started to see things that you wanted to capture?
I think that I always wanted to make a book, but I wasn't really sure when I was there what was going to be the end result of it. I really just wanted to have the time to be able to focus on one project. And so I was lucky enough to find a place that I stayed for 5 weeks and was able to travel around from there. I pretty much drove, you know, 3 hours a day, up to 6 hours a day, exploring Nova Scotia. But I really didn't know what the end result was going to be. I just wanted the time to be by myself and photograph and see what came of it, let it sort of evolve on its own. I didn't really understand, I don't think at the time when I was photographing, how my emotional state was kind of coming through the images. It just were things that I was drawn to. And I think looking back, they really do represent, you know, what was happening with me personally. But at the time, I think I was a little unaware.
There's a sense of exploring, and there's a sense of things being gone. There's an image of a picture frame with luggage, and then there's a room that's sort of all antiques. You find a mural of a couple who just got married, and it's facing from the back. You know, maybe you could tell us what did you see?
Where did those find? You know, Nova Scotia is a very it's a very wild landscape. It's very natural. It hasn't been developed very much. And so you find interesting things there. And the picture of the newlyweds, the mural was outside of a wedding shop in Halifax that I photographed for a few hours, actually. But the mural was the one that hit me the most. And I think that one is representative, you know, most literally of kind of what was happening. But I think that the picture that you also described called Yard Sale with the frame with luggage behind it was really representative of how I was feeling at the time. Sort of, you know, I'm going to be out of my house most likely and with nowhere. I wasn't sure where I was going to go or where I was going to end up, especially emotionally. So I think, drawn to things that I felt like I was going to be losing. I photographed a lot of houses and simple things. The photograph of the rug hanging on the line to me was a photograph of something very beautiful and very simple and representative of sort of house and home and things that I felt I was now going to lose.
There is a real theme of romanticism and nostalgia and kind of an epicness. There's the picture of this huge rock in a field, and then there are these photographs of fog, which you write about in the text that goes with the part one, and the headlights in the fog. And
right. It's very foggy there. It can last, it lasted days without lifting. So in one sense, I was sort of forced to photograph in the fog. But in another sense, I think it kind of forced me to get out and face some fears that I had of being alone or not knowing where I was. The photograph with the headlights in the fog, I was entering the Cabot Trail, which is a beautiful roadway that runs north of Nova Scotia on the northern edge. And it was about 6 a.m., and I had pulled over because the fog was so thick that I thought I was scared. And I didn't see anyone, and I didn't know what I was going to do, whether I was going to turn around or just keep going. And I think it was kind of a turning point in a way because I saw this car coming through the fog and ended up photographing a different car, but it sort of gave me a small sense of hope at that point that, you know, just keep going and there's other people out there on the other side. And I did, and it lifted like, 2 minutes after that. But I think it's kind of representative also of being in a position of indecision, of fear, being placed in a situation that's unfamiliar to you and forcing yourself to just keep going, to find some way to get through it.
A lot of the text in your work talks about using kind of your art as an experience to overcome fear. And in the second part, you really write about the forest and that you had this childhood fear of the forest, which as you entered into this really difficult experience of loss, you thought, what I'm afraid of is being alone. And the second part has a different feel. There's a different kind of intensity, kind of like you're going to stand up to these trees, which are kind of the stretching, really reaching to the edges of the photograph. But you write about wanting to capture the image and imprison it.
Exactly. I think that the first part of the book is more about coping with indecision, with loss, with sadness, and not knowing what direction to go in. And the second part was really about coping with the fear of the situation and anger. And I had photographed those pictures were taken in Rock Creek Park, pretty much in and around the house I was living in at the time in Washington, D.C. And I had photographed there many times before, but it didn't feel right. The images didn't have the mood that I needed them to. And when I came back from Nova Scotia and started photographing again, it was like something had clicked and it felt right. And yes, it was me trying to kind of imprison something to take back control of a small piece of my life and addressing kind of a fear that had been with me for a long time. And you know, Rock Creek Park, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but there's a lot of meandering paths and it's very easy to get lost there. It's not like Central Park where there's a lot of open fields. It's can be a very solitary experience. And so it was the perfect place, especially being around my house, to try and capture these trees. And I think at the same time, show kind of my intimidation of them, but also in some way show a kind of beauty and respect for them as well. And I think that a lot of the images in both parts kind of go back and forth between, you know, feeling good at times and feeling bad at times. And I think anyone that has experienced this kind of loss, or loss in general, and feeling of displacement can relate to sort of the ups and downs, the emotional sort of roller coaster that happens during something like this.
And so you started out as an architect.
Yeah.
So how did you find your way to photography, and how can we see that journey in your work, in your approach?
Well, I did. I went to Washington University in St. Louis for architecture. And the education there, the first 2 years, they pretty much throw you into every type of artistic medium. I mean, we did painting, drawing, sculpture, furniture design, graphic design, photography, you name it. And we had a tiny little dark room, and an architectural photographer there kind of took me under his wing and encouraged me and started working with me one-on-one. I mean, I think I got one credit for the work, even though I was spending the most time on that in the end. But I moved back to D.C., and I started working as an architect, and just felt at some point that I really wanted to be making my own art instead of building or designing someone else's vision. And I had always had an interest in photography. My parents always encouraged me to try different things. And eventually my dad took me to a Harry Callahan big retrospective at the National Gallery of Art. And when I saw those images and how beautifully crafted they were, it was like looking at my idea of perfection. And I knew then that this is what I wanted to really dedicate myself to. And so from there, I just delved into education and ended up taking, I think, 4 workshops in Maine at various times to give me the skill that I needed at that particular time. And then I went off. I took one workshop with George Tice that had a huge influence on me, because it made me realize, you know, as a landscape photographer, first of all, that I could be an urban landscape photographer, and that I didn't have to come out to New Mexico and photograph things that, you know, millions of other people have photographed. And from there, started working on a portfolio in Charleston, West Virginia. And I think you can really see the architectural influence there, because most of the photographs are of buildings, and they're taken, I think, in a very respectful way. I think that's common throughout all of my images. There's a certain respect for whatever the subject is that comes through. But I think in that particular series, it was really about buildings and my love of them.
You can see the influence of Harry Callahan, who, of course, is really known for those location series, and then all the books of his wife, Eleanor, and that kind of trying to capture the location in a series of photographs. You can really see that in your work.
I think what Harry Callahan did for me was that I looked at a lot of the photographs that he was taking in Chicago and New York of these building facades, and it reminded me, honestly, of things that I had been drawing by hand in school. And so it was a wonderful transition for me to be able to see how I could take this love of buildings that I had and translate that into really beautiful, fine photographs. And, you know, Harry Callahan, I just thought he was the ultimate in perfection. I mean, he photographed in black and white and color, landscape, portraits, collages. He was very open to experimenting, and he's always kind of been the standard by which I hope to live up to at some point.
So your work also has that sense of Robert Adams, and particularly Summer Nights. And he, you know, in his writing, he talks about kind of shifting the perspective of things we see all the time. And how does that kind of fit, shape your work?
You know, it's funny. I think that the work that Robert Adams did that made him famous is not necessarily the work that I'm drawn to the most by him. You're talking about his most recent book, Summer Nights Walking. And I think he has an appreciation for the ordinary shown in an extraordinary way that I really value. I think, you know, that photograph of the rug in Nova Scotia is something that maybe he would appreciate too. And that book, Summer Nights Walking, you feel that there's an intimacy between him and the subject in every picture, and a respect. And he did a book about his dog that I loved. It's so personal and something of the everyday in all of those images. And those are things that I'm drawn to in other people's work.
For those of you just turning in, we are talking with Lauren Henkin about her new photography book called Displaced. And the image that you just brought up of the photograph in Nova Scotia in the first part of the book, it's a rug, like a quilt rug, very tethered, obviously very old, been with the family a long time, and it's hanging on a laundry line in a yard. And you really get that sense of just history. You know, it's awful looking, but to someone, it's beautiful.
Right. And to me, it was beautiful. I mean, it was on this road that looked like the road had been abandoned, but it was facing this incredible body of water. And here was this rug just drying by itself. And it just struck me as being, you know, just probably one of the most beautiful things I had ever seen. And, you know, I sort of imagine someone hanging it and the ritual sort of that process. And there's nothing really in Nova Scotia that that is glitzy or glamorous. It can be a very hard existence living there.
It gets very cold.
Oh, it gets, I mean, it's an extremely kind of brutal landscape. And, you know, there's no shrubs around the houses. And I think, you know, there's a stability, there's a strength there, which is what I was drawn to in the land and that the structures. And I think that's what drew me to it.
And so in the first part, the light is natural light. And then the second part, how is the light, you use light differently in each piece? What was your technique there?
Well, I definitely am more drawn to photographing in flat light. I think that the reason is because I can sort of envision a final print being easier for someone to look at and get into. In flat light than with harsher sun and harsher contrast and shadows. And I have just moved kind of more and more towards shooting in those conditions. And in Nova Scotia, I pretty much didn't have that much of a choice. It was like that pretty consistently with the fog. But in D.C., I did have a choice and specifically went out on days where the light was muted to in a sense match it in some respect to Nova Scotia, but also to enable someone to look at these dense images a little easier and to process all the information that was in them.
So it's important to you to really communicate through the photograph that you want someone to understand your perspective.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the goal, and it's sort of a fine line, but the goal is to have someone be able to look at these photographs and not necessarily know what they're about, but to be able to relate them in some respect to their own life experiences, but also to feel that the artist is invested in the work as well and to get to know them as an artist also. And that's a pretty difficult thing to do. And I think for me, it's the challenge and what keeps me interested in photography is being able to achieve that balance. And any artist, I think, has to, you know, be able to do that. And that's the thing that I find fascinating and wonderful about it.
So this is a self-published book, and you actually pre-sold. You really kind of threw yourself at the world in getting this book out there. And you enlisted a famous printmaker, is that right?
Well, what I did was I was attending the Photo Lucida photography conference here in Portland in 2009, April, and I thought this is a really great opportunity for me to take this project to the next step, and I created a book dummy for that project for that conference, and pretty much just decided once I saw the dummy that this has got to happen. This is the right next step for this project, and pretty much just dedicated myself to it, not knowing how I was going to finance it, not really having any experience in bookmaking, besides designing books, which I do have some experience. But so I applied for a regional arts and culture grant, which I got, which paid for half of the book cost. And I worked with Inga Brugman, who's a local Portland letterpress printer, and John Demerit in Emeryville, California, who ended up binding the books. But they're all original prints. It's essentially a bound portfolio of images. And it sort of became a labor of love for me. But between the grant and corporate sponsorship and pre-sales, I was pretty much able to cover the costs before they were completed with the final product, before John Demerit was done binding them. So I think in this economy, you know, I get questions all the time from artists about how to finance their projects. And I think I learned a lot through this about how to do that. And especially here in Portland, there are so many opportunities for artists. People, businesses want to support the community. It's just a question of asking for help and asking for what you want.
So do you think kind of your art becoming something more personal, you found an energy to put it out there more? But that took a lot of courage to really speak about your personal experience. How did you get to that place? And how has it changed? How has it changed you as an artist?
I wasn't talking about the separation or the problems in my personal life when I first started presenting this work. And it was really a conversation that I had with Kirsten Ryan, a friend here in Portland, who she kept prodding me and asking me, but why did you go to Nova Scotia? Why? And eventually I told her, and it just sort of clicked that, you know, I have to share that, because the pictures, while they make sense on one level without that knowledge, bring a whole new level of understanding with it. And so, you know, it was kind of like ripping a big Band-Aid off little by little every time I had to talk about my personal life in front of groups of people. But it was also very freeing as an artist, because I thought, if I can talk about this in front of everybody, I can talk about anything.
Right, you're like, what am I actually capable of here?
Exactly. Yeah, that's a little scary. But it also kind of gave me an understanding of what really attracts me. I mean, I think it's things that are surviving that aren't really supposed to be surviving. And I think, you know, I'm doing a series of photographs right now on urban tree portraits and how these trees are growing in places they shouldn't be growing. And I think it's...
You mean because of the decay?
Or circumstance. They're growing in between buildings that you wouldn't, you know, expect anything to be growing, or they're invading pre-existing hardscapes that, you know, nothing should be growing there. And I think, you know, I did a series of photographs of one tree that was being overtaken by weeds and had been struck by lightning. And it's just these things, I think, that persevere, that is the common thread for all of my work and what interests me.
In the text of the second part, there, when you sort of talk about the body of the work coming together, there's a real life-affirming hopefulness. You talk about having used the project, having been for you overcoming fear, and finding yourself, being able to be authentic to your experience. But the last image, it's like the flower branch.
Right.
It has a real shadow edge to it, which is, kind of darker than the hopefulness of the text. Is there a contrast there? Do you see it that way?
I think there's some contrast in a lot of the images. And I think it's a very subtle thing that happens, but I think it's important because it leaves people wondering kind of what really is going on. And I think of two images in particular that do that. The one you just mentioned is one. And in that image, I was actually laying on the ground, and I felt like this is, you know, it's a photograph of kind of dead flowers and looking up at the sky and just sort of saying, this is it. I'll either die here or I will be reborn in some way. And it felt like the best ending possible for the project. But the other image that I was thinking of is the girl in the water in Nova Scotia. And for me, you know, that picture has also that, question of, is this a good thing or is this not so good? I can't quite understand. And I think it's because, you know, here's this sort of idyllic picture of this girl, you know, beautiful blonde girl in an inner tube. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, in the water. But at the same time, there's no context with the water. You don't know how far out she is. I think the perspective is a little odd. And the water is kind of swirling around her. I mean, it kind of almost looks like she could be sort of swept away. And so I think with the images that I take, I try and kind of get these this tension happening, you know, leaving the viewer kind of questioning, well, I think this is what is happening here, but I'm not quite sure. And so I think those two images are good examples of what you're talking about.
Yeah, and at the opening, when you had the prints at your studio, people were really responding to the house at the it's at this kind of unlikely distance from an angle. And
right.
There's something unusual about that.
You know, I look at that photograph all the time, and I think I had a poster of Andrew Wyeth's Christina's World in my house that I used to look at all the time and never really understood why I connected to it so much. And I think I felt like I was the girl in that painting. I mean, I kind of look like her, I think, and there's this longing that she has looking at this house. And I think I photographed that house in Nova Scotia in a very similar way. And to me, it was like, this is it. This is my dream, and this is what I'm losing all in one picture. And I think, I don't know if people pick up on that, but to me, that's what it was about. And it's a little haunting, I think.
Thank you, Lauren, for talking with us. It's a really beautiful, interesting book of really striking images. And it's put together in a way that's a real kind of journey. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you so much, Wendy.
And if you want to find out more about Lauren and her work in the book Displaced, you can go to www.laurenhenkin, that's Lauren, LaurenHenkin.com. And this has been Art Focus, and this is Wendy Webb. Thank you so much.